Welcome to Beta Finch, your AI-powered earnings breakdown. I'm Alex, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Jordan. Today, we're diving into Eli Lilly's first quarter 2026 results, and wow, what a quarter this was. Jordan, before we jump in, I need to mention that this podcast is AI-generated content for educational and entertainment purposes only. Nothing we discuss should be considered investment advice. Always do your own research and consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions.
Thanks, Alex. And you're absolutely right about this being a wow quarter. Lilly just posted some absolutely staggering numbers. We're talking about 56% revenue growth year over year, bringing in what appears to be massive increase in revenues. But what really caught my attention was their guidance raise. They bumped up their full year revenue expectations by $2 billion. To between $82 and $85 billion.
That's incredible. Let me put that in perspective for our listeners. The midpoint of that guidance represents 28% growth for the full year. For a company of Lilly's size, that's just phenomenal. And the driving force here is clearly their GLP-1 portfolio, Mounjaro and Zepbound combined, brought in $12.8 billion in global revenue just in first quarter, contributing $6.7 billion of growth compared to last year.
What's fascinating is how this growth is playing out globally. We saw really strong international momentum for Mounjaro. In markets like Brazil and Korea, they're claiming around 60% market share. And here's something interesting. They mentioned that generic semaglutide entry in some markets like India actually seems to be stimulating overall market growth rather than hurting Lilly's position.
That's a great point about the generics. CEO Dave Ricks made a really insightful comment during the Q&A about how this obesity market behaves differently from traditional pharma categories. He said that because so much of the business is out of pocket, 75% of ex-US Mounjaro business and a meaningful portion in the US, they see quite expansionary volume when they reduce prices. It's almost like the demand curve is more elastic than typical prescription drugs.
Exactly. And speaking of new developments, let's talk about Kyndeo, their newly approved oral GLP-1. This is huge because it's the first new incretin medicine launched with obesity as the primary indication, not diabetes. They mentioned having over 20,000 patients treated already, with about 80% being new to the class entirely.
The Kyndeo launch strategy is really interesting. They're taking a measured approach. They started with digital campaigns, moved to in-person physician promotion, and they're planning full-scale direct-to-consumer TV advertising in third quarter. What I found telling was that they already have over 8,000 prescribers, with a third of them never having prescribed an oral GLP-1 before.
And the access piece is critical. They've secured commercial access at two of the three largest pharmacy benefit managers, effective mid-May. Plus, the Medicare Bridge program extension through 2027 could be a game changer. We're talking about $50 monthly copays for seniors. When an analyst asked about Medicare activation, management indicated this will be a gradual build through 2026 and into 2027.
Let's talk about their pipeline, because they were incredibly busy on the R&D front. They announced four acquisitions this quarter: Orna Therapeutics for autoimmune CAR-T therapies, Centessa for sleep disorders, Colonia for cancer treatments, and Ajax for blood cancers. Plus, they had positive phase 3 data for multiple programs.
The retatrutide data particularly caught my eye. This is their triple agonist, GIP, GLP-1, and glucagon. In the TRANSCEND-T2D1 trial, patients lost an average of 25 to 37 pounds while also achieving excellent blood sugar control. Management suggested this could deliver glycemic control similar to tirzepatide, but with additional weight loss. That could be significant for the diabetes population who struggle with weight management.
What's their runway looking like financially? They raised their non-GAAP earnings per share guidance to $35.50 to $37. That's a $2 increase on both ends. Their performance margin is expected to be between 47% and 48.5%, and they're clearly not shy about spending. R&D expenses increased 28% as they're running 42 active phase 3 programs.
The capital allocation story is interesting too. They distributed $1.5 billion in dividends and executed $2.4 billion in share repurchases in first quarter alone. But they're also being very aggressive on business development. Dan Skovronsky, their Chief Scientific Officer, made it clear they see opportunities to scale their immunology, neuroscience, and oncology franchises to eventually match their metabolic business scale.
One thing that stood out in the Q&A was the discussion about market segmentation. An analyst asked about how different drugs might serve different patient populations, and management painted a picture of a future where patients have multiple tailored options, maybe retatrutide for those seeking greater weight loss, olorelintide for better tolerability, or even combination therapies.
The international growth story shouldn't be overlooked either. They're now launched in over 55 countries with Mounjaro, and they mentioned China specifically, where inclusion on the national reimbursement drug list drove strong growth despite price concessions. It seems like they've figured out that volume expansion more than compensates for pricing pressure in these markets.
Looking ahead, what should investors be watching? They've got TRIUMPH-1 results for retatrutide in obesity coming later this quarter, potential FDA action on Kuvan for diabetes before year-end, and the gradual rollout of Medicare access starting in July.
From a competitive standpoint, I think the key question is sustainability. They're clearly winning now, but with oral options entering the market and more competition coming, can they maintain these growth rates? Management seems confident, especially given their pipeline depth and manufacturing investments.
The margin structure is particularly interesting. Rix emphasized that their unit economics are driven by fixed costs, both sunk R&D and manufacturing CapEx. That gives them flexibility on pricing while maintaining strong profitability, which could be crucial as competition intensifies.
Before we wrap up, I want to highlight that everything we've discussed today is AI-generated analysis for educational purposes only. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results, and this kind of rapid growth story comes with risks. Please do your own due diligence before making any investment decisions.
Absolutely. Lilly's first quarter results show a company firing on all cylinders: massive revenue growth, pipeline advancement, strategic acquisitions, and strong execution on new launches. Whether they can maintain this momentum will depend on successful drug launches, market expansion, and staying ahead of competition. Thanks for listening to Beta Finch, and we'll see you next time for another AI-powered earnings breakdown.
Thanks, everyone.
That's all for today's earnings analysis. If you found this helpful, consider supporting Beta Finch on Patreon. Your support helps us upgrade our voices, cover more companies, and keep this show running. Visit patreon.com/betafinch to learn more. Thanks for listening.